Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Past the hour, you're listening to Faith Radio Mornings on this Tuesday, the 17th. I'm Dick Whitworth. It's great to be with you, filling in for Peter Kapsner. Here today with me is Logan Roush, our producer, along with Paul Perreault in the newsroom. Special thanks to Rachel Sutton for her help in putting the show together. Logan, in a few moments, we're going to be talking to Grace Fox. She is an author and a women's speaker, and just her and her husband, Gene, have been missionaries. And so we'll be hearing from her in just a few moments. Do you remember the Blockbuster video chain?
I do, only usually in jokes about Blockbuster video, but yes, I do.
Do you know there's still one left?
Really?
Yes, in Bend, Oregon. Apparently, over the weekend, there were three on Friday, but over the weekend, two of them in Alaska closed. There is one Blockbuster video store left, and it is in Bend, Oregon.
But they only give VHSs out. They don't have any other DVDs.
No, I think they actually do really well. In fact, as I heard about this, the manager of the Oregon store says they will keep stocking their DVDs, their Blu-rays, and video games, and there is no plan to shut down in the near future.
Hmm.
So kind of back to the future.
Yeah, there you go.
Blockbuster video.
I like it.
Who knew? All right, we're going to take a break. It's 5 past the hour, actually about 6 past the hour. When we return, we'll be talking with Grace Fox, and she wrote an article for Family Life Today entitled "Don't Touch My Stuff." You'll find out more in just a few moments. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth. It's a joy to be with you. And it's an honor today to introduce you to Grace Fox. Grace is a Canadian, and she is our guest on Faith Radio Mornings. She's actually from Abbotsford, British Columbia, with her husband, Gene. They've been married for 36 years. 3 grown children, 7 grandchildren. And through a remarkable turn of events, she lives on a boat after selling all of her possessions. We'll tell you more about her and that comment in just a moment. Grace, welcome to Faith Radio Mornings.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be here.
Well, we are excited to get acquainted. I came across an article. It's actually, I guess, an excerpt from a book that's 11 years old, and it's entitled "Don't Touch My Stuff." And it reminded me of when I was the youngest of 3 boys and my brothers always touched my stuff. And I thought, I've got to read this article. But that wasn't entirely what it was about. But kind of give us an overview of the book, Don't Touch My Stuff.
Yeah, actually, Don't Touch My Stuff is just one of the chapter titles in the book. The book is actually called Moving from Fear to Freedom, A Woman's Guide to Peace in Every Situation. And so what I did before I wrote that book was a survey of about 350 women ages 19 to 80 just to see what some of the common fears were. And one of them was the fear of losing our material possessions.
Well, it's,
or financial insecurity, same thing, you know, like not having enough money to pay the bills at the end of the month.
Well, and that's really where this chapter picks up. It talks about Anne, who was in a print shop, and long story short, a fire destroyed her home. Can you elaborate for a few moments on that story and how it sets up the whole possession challenge that we all have?
Yeah. So Anne was a friend of mine, and her family had actually a home in the city where she worked, where the print shop was, but then this little house was on an island, a tiny island. So, of course, there's no fire hydrant, nothing like that. And they were the caretakers for a celebrity who owned a house on a neighboring island. And so this house was one that they lived in all summer long, and they'd go out there on the weekends in the winter. So they had a lot of their precious things there because it was their home. It wasn't just like a cottage. It was a full-blown house that her family lived in part-time. And so I remember her saying that she had a mandolin that her grandfather, I think, had given her from Finland. I mean, you know, children's photos and her kids' baby clothes that she was saving for her grandchildren and those kinds of precious possessions. So, yeah, she got a call one day while she was at work saying that her house was on fire, completely involved. And because there was no fire hydrant, no easy access, it burned to the ground before it just couldn't be saved. And she and her husband went out there and watched as the firefighters did what they could in mopping up at the end. And they saw a book on the railing on the wharf, a little book. It was, you know, partly burned and, I mean, barely there. But she could make out the title on the cover, and it said, "Count Your Blessings." And then she just remembered thinking, all my stuff is gone, but my family's okay. We're okay. Nobody got hurt. And isn't that what really matters? And she said that just really transformed her thinking about the role of material possessions in one's life and, you know, the importance that we can tend to put on them and how joy and peace and freedom don't come from possessions, but they come from our relationship with the Lord and just trusting Him to be our provider and finding our joy in Him, our satisfaction and contentment in Him rather than in our stuff.
Yeah, it is true that one moment we are in a good place, and whether it's a pink slip, a fire, a health concern, things can change rapidly. And, you know, we Christians know what you've just talked about, that our worth and our health and all those kinds of things are in a relationship with Jesus, but we still struggle with our stuff, don't we?
Oh, we do. Absolutely we do. We find such comfort in it. I mean, I'm in women's ministries. I speak at women's events all over, even internationally. And women contend, and not just women, probably men too, right? But contend to put way too much importance on the comfort that things can bring. I'm thinking of a conversation I had with a friend just this weekend. And she was telling me about all the little kitchen gadgets that she has and, you know, all these things are bringing her such joy. And I'm thinking, wow, I had to purge my house from all that kind of stuff. And so I'm down to pretty basic stuff in my little tiny galley, but it still functions. I don't need all those things to function. And I just feel like the Lord's given me such freedom from looking to material possessions to find my satisfaction, I don't have to look to things anymore to bring me comfort if I'm stressed at the end of a day, you know?
I completely understand, and I think what I enjoyed about your article and then what I read on your website, and that's Grace Fox, F-O-X, gracefox.com, is to know that you're not just talking kind of pie in the sky. You, too, have been through some tragedy. You've, almost lost a daughter several days old, and she had hydrocephalus. Can you tell us that story in just a couple of moments?
Sure. My husband and I were actually missionaries in Nepal back in the 80s. We went there when we were only married 5 months, and we had a son born there, and everything was fine. But when our daughter came along, she was born with hydrocephalus, and the doctors just looked at us and said, you have to go back to North America on a first available flight because we can't help her here. We don't have the wherewithal to do the surgery. She needs a shunt in her head to drain the excess fluid off her brain. And so the airlines, in very short story, the airlines refused a ticket to me because they called me a medical high risk for having had a cesarean section. And so I had to stay behind for about a week. My husband was able to get a ticket, and he wrapped her up in a big blanket, and we gave him a bottle of Express breast milk, and off he went with this 3-day-old daughter.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was left behind not knowing whether I would see her alive again or not. And boy, the Lord just took me to a whole new level of trust over that. She's 33 now. She had 11 surgeries in the first couple of years of her life, and she had meningitis. She could have died any number of times, but she's doing quite well, and for that we are thankful. But boy, did I learn lessons about the faithfulness of God through learning to trust Him through not just that one experience. Well, I was left behind wondering what in the world was going on with my life, but through the years afterwards of all the health crises that she went through.
Grace Fox, author, speaker. She is our guest today on Faith Radio Mornings. We're going to hear more from Grace in just a moment. Thank you for joining us. Welcome back. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth, filling in for Dr. Peter Kapsner this week. Peter is on vacation, and it's a joy for me to have this opportunity to share with you. Hope your morning is going well. By the way, our guest today in this segment is Grace Fox. Grace and her husband, Gene, they live in Abbotsford, British Columbia. They do all kinds of exciting things. She's actually, you're helping teams with short-term missionary trips, is that right?
Yeah. My husband and I have actually been in career missions for about 25 years. So living on faith support, as we talk about finances and material possessions, we know what it is to trust the Lord to provide for us month to month. But my husband is the Canadian director for a mission organization called International Messengers. So we have a U.S. office in Clear Lake, Iowa, and my husband is the director for the Canadian side of it. And we work with about 200 career missionaries in 25 countries, but we also do two-week short-term trips, mostly to teach conversational English using the Bible as a tool in evangelistic family camps and youth camps overseas. And we do just a lot of different ministries, working with orphans and widows and into the Middle East now, working with Syrian refugees, doing a lot of different ministries.
That's very exciting. Well, we are honored today, Grace, to have you with us on Faith Radio Mornings. We're really talking about possessions. Jesus said a man's life consists not in the abundance of things that he possesses. I heard Rick Warren the other day say that you've seen the bumper sticker that says he who has the most toys win. And he says it really should read, he who has the most toys dies anyway. You know,
yeah.
He dies as well. Tell us about your new adventure in the winter of 2018. You and Gene made an incredible decision, and you're living on a boat. Tell me how all of that happened.
Oh, my word. My husband grew up on the water in Washington State, so he was very familiar. Drove a speedboat when he was 6 years old for the first time, and then got into sailing through Boy Scouts, and his dad got a boat, and eventually, after we came back from Nepal, we lived in the States for 11 years. Well, Gene worked as a civil engineer, and then the Lord called us into Christian camping ministry on a little island off BC, BC's coast. So he developed a sailing camp for adults and teens up there. And we bought a 27-foot Catalina, and the camp actually used it more than we did when we were up there. But that was a part of the fleet that he developed for this camp. And back then, that was in 96 to 2007, during that course of time. Early on, during that time, we just had one day a walk in a marina and looked at some big sailboats. And my husband said, wouldn't it be fun to live on a big boat someday? And I went, sure, yeah. Well, I grew up on the prairies of southern Alberta. The first time I rode a boat, I did it backwards and couldn't figure out why it went so slow. That was my experience with boating until I met this man. And so I said, sure, that'd be great, because I thought it would never happen. So 20 years later, this last year in August, we came back from Poland and doing ministry there, and we had opportunities to walk a marina. There were several big boats for sale, and I can't even say what entered my head, but we're looking in this little, you know, in a boat. It was 44 feet long, and I said, you know what? We talked once about living on a boat someday. We're not getting any younger, but we're stronger and we're more fit than we've been in 20 years, because we've been really intentional about our health in the last 2.5 years. And I said, we're not getting any younger. We have this one window to live on a boat. If we don't do it now, we'll never do it. And my husband's jaw just dropped, and he said, are you serious? And I looked at him, and my jaw dropped, and I said, I guess so. And from that point on, we just prayed and said, Lord, where did this even come from? Like, bam, into my head, out of my mouth. I can't even explain it. But we just put it before the Lord and said, if this is going to happen, and if this is you saying now, then we're trusting you for every detail. So we need a boat, and we need to know if we can afford this. And we need a place to put it. Every broker within a 200-mile radius said there are no slips available. There's a 7-year waiting list in the marinas in the Vancouver area. 7 years to get a spot for liveaboards. Anyways, you know what? Like, the Lord put every detail together. Even the banker gave us a loan before we even asked for a loan. We just asked what we could qualify for. And he said, it's good till January the 4th. If you don't use it by then, you know, you can look for a boat in the spring, but the interest rate will be up because it's going up.
Sure.
But he gave us a fantastic interest rate. Again, long story short, we found a boat in December. The deal closed on January the 4th, and a slip opened up to us 1 week before we had to move it into a spot to live. And it was the exact slip that we had scouted out and thought if we could have any slip we wanted anywhere, this would be it. But there was a boat in it, right? Well, that boat sold and the owner moved it away, and we had put our name on a waiting list, not knowing what would happen. But the marina manager called us up 1 week before we needed to be out of our house, and he said, you can have it if you want it. Like, there's just no human explanation for how this happens.
The story really comes down to this, because we're running out of time. God had a purpose and a plan.
Oh, my goodness. We had to get rid of all of our earthly belongings, but family photos mostly is what I've got in storage, and three pieces of furniture that, like, my special gifts and a couple things that my grandfather made for me. That's it. And everything else is on the boat. But we are here in the marina at God's purpose because we are surrounded by people who need to know Jesus. People who are hurting, and big time hurting. But you know what? They stand and they pour their hearts out to us on the dock. And we say, hey, we believe in prayer. Would it be okay if we prayed for you? One of my favorite responses is this. I'm an atheist, but you guys give me good vibes. So yeah, go ahead and pray.
That is so amazing. I love the story because of the end result. You're in a place of ministry that I can't imagine anybody would think about in terms of send me there, Lord. You know, how cool.
Yeah. And the boat is the key. I keep thinking back to John 4 where Jesus sat down at the well with a Samaritan woman, and he was thirsty, and she came to fetch water, and the cup of water was the commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And for us living in this marina with these people, some of who have been here for 30 years, we're the new kids on the block. And so we're learning lots, my husband especially, about the systems on the boat. And so he just asks one of these guys if they are delighted to help. The boat is the commonality.
Isn't that amazing?
And
let's do this,
we're
Grace.
We're developing relationship with him.
I'm running out of time. I've got about 30, 40 seconds. What do you say to the person right now who's lost their job, their fear of the future, possessions? Give us a word of encouragement in closing.
I would say that if you make Jesus your focus, go deep in your walk with Jesus and keep your eyes and your ears open because he's got your back. He promises to care for you, and that doesn't mean you'll never go through a storm. It doesn't mean he's going to give you everything your heart desires, but it means you will find contentment and satisfaction and your needs met in him, and he will direct your path and care for you in ways that you might never expect.
You could be on a boat.
You could be.
Grace Fox has been my guest this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. If you'd like more information about Grace and her ministry, her and Jean, you can find it at gracefox.com. Thank you for joining us. We'll have more of Faith Radio Mornings in a moment. 30 minutes past the hour. Coming up after the news, we'll be talking to Dr. Alan Noble about his new book, Disruptive Witness. It's a fascinating book on evangelism in this century, in this decade. Actually, it's going to be very fun as we talk about the distractions that affect us. Again, 31 past the hour. More of Faith Radio Mornings after the news. We are 35 minutes past the hour. Bill English, consultant and founder of BibleandBusiness.com, talks about how it is the call of the Christian community is to care for those with and around them.
Jonathan Sacks, he's a Jewish rabbi. He has written in this area, and in his book called The Dignity of Difference, he outlines the Jewish concept of the community not letting people be in need. It is immoral for the community to let a fellow Jewish brother or sister be in need. I don't know that we have that ethos in our evangelical churches necessarily. I mean, how many of us go to church and we think, oh, there's a brother in need. Is there a social service we can point them to? Instead of, this is my responsibility to take care of.
That's Bill English, consultant and founder of BibleAndBusiness.com. If you'd like more information from Bill and on his life, you can go to BibleAndBusiness.com or you can visit MyFaithRadio.com. In the search bar, put Bill English and a whole host of content and opportunity for discussion. We'll show there. Coming up next, we'll be talking to Dr. Alan Noble. He's an assistant professor of English at Oklahoma Baptist University, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Christ and Pop Culture on his new book, Disruptive Witness.
When kids are little, they respond well to clearly defined commands. When they grow up, however, they begin to resist taking orders from mom and dad. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If you have a teen in your house, you already know what I'm talking about. Kids don't like to be told what they should have done or what they need to do better. In fact, when teens are wrestling with new issues in life, they seldom respond to a lecture. Many times, repetition at this stage of development only reminds them of how they failed or missed an opportunity to shine. Constant nagging, correction, and badgering often just pushes them away. So back off a little. Most of the time, what's really needed is a listening ear.
Parenting gets a lot harder when you do it alone. Gather a group of parents and learn from Mark's wisdom together. You'll find a variety of small group curricula online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
We are 38 minutes past the hour. I'm Dick Whitworth. It's Faith Radio Mornings, and with me now is Dr. Alan Noble. He is an assistant professor of English at Oklahoma Baptist University, co-founder and editor and chief of Christ and Pop Culture. He has written for The Atlantics, BuzzFeed, Gospel Coalition, Christianity Today, and others. Dr. Noble, welcome to Faith Radio Mornings.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I understand that you've been with us before, but it's great to have you today. And we're going to talk about your new book entitled Disruptive Witness, Speaking Truth in a Distracted Age. What were you hoping to accomplish when you wrote the book?
I think the primary purpose is to help readers, specifically in the church, become more aware of the particular challenges in our time to sharing our faith, whether it's explicit evangelism or through just conversations with our neighbors or modeling the Christian faith in the way that we live our life. I think there are two particular challenges, secularism and technology of distraction, that creates new barriers to belief for a lot of people. And so I wanted to highlight those, what those things are, what those challenges are, and then offer some ways forward.
Some would say your book is anti-technology. Is that accurate?
So I try to be, I guess what I would call a tech realist. I want to acknowledge almost without making any moral arguments about whether our technology, specifically things like social media and smartphones and the way they distract us, I'm trying not to make sort of moral arguments about whether those are good or bad for us, because for my purposes, that's kind of beside the point. The challenge that I'm trying to give is that when you share your faith to someone who is likely to spend the rest of their day plugged into something, moving from app to app, listening to music, podcasts, television shows, music, movies, reading news clips on social media, posting on Instagram, they're probably not going to have the time to have the contemplation about the reality of the gospel that's really so important for it to take root. And so whether or not technology is bad or not, the challenge before us today is, what are we going to do? And that's where I try to put my focus.
Okay. So What moved you to write the book? I mean, was this a personal experience or just an observation or a little bit of both?
So I am a big student of Francis Schaeffer, the great evangelical speaker.
How then shall I live?
Theologian.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And he, in the 1970s in particular, had this powerful model of evangelizing where a lot of people would come to him who were seekers. These were people who in the 70s, 60s and 70s had realized, you know, this lifestyle that my parents are living, that I'm living, just isn't satisfying. I need answers. Is there a God? What is truth? These sorts of things. And he would have these fascinating conversations with them. And I reflected a couple of years ago, and Schaeffer primarily used a sort of worldview analysis approach. He would sort of help them see what their worldview was and move through that. And I asked the question to myself, is that approach still effective today, or have the social conditions changed? And I found myself answering, I don't think the world operates that way in 2018. Primarily, I think it's because people are more content with cognitive dissonance. It's easier today, I think, to not answer the big questions because there's so much for us to do. There's so many entertaining and interesting things for us to do. We really don't have to answer those big questions. We can just kind of stay numb to them. And I think that presents a different challenge. And so that's what really sparked it.
Mm-hmm. InterVarsity Press, of course, provided some promotional materials. And one of the items that they gave us was, of course, the book excerpt, A Distracted and Disenchanted Day in the Life. And I assume that's you that it's talking about. But it's quite challenging and revealing because you literally talk about how easy it is. And as I'm reading it, I'm feeling incredibly, how can I say this, guilty and identifying with you, because it's like every moment of the day I'm entertaining or filling my mind with something. And kind of give us an overview of what that excerpt was about.
Yeah, so there I tried to just give an honest account of what many of my days, hopefully less, fewer of those days are like that now, but many of my days were like where I wake up and really the first thing I do is grab my phone and check and see what's going on in the world on social media. And as I move through my day while I'm eating breakfast, I'm on my phone. You know, as I'm dropping off the kids, I'm listening to music. As I'm at work, I'm answering emails or listening to music. During my lunch break, I'm on social media, reading news, listening to a podcast, playing a game. When I come home, I'm watching television or a game. And, even what's remarkable is that we feel a sense of anxiety when we're not doing something. Mm-hmm. When I'm going upstairs to go fetch something, it's hard for me not to reach for my phone. That's not good. Because we have to be able to be comfortable being alone with ourselves. John Calvin said that in order to know God, you have to know yourself. And by that, he didn't mean that you have to find out who the true you is. But he meant that you have to be able to give an honest account of who you are. You have to see your sinfulness and your need and desire for God, for Christ. And this is true for non-Christians. It's just as true for Christians. If we have no space in our minds because we're so connected and so busy and so filled up with things, if we have no space to reflect on our day and realize what we've done and who we are, it's going to be hard for us to repent and mature. Mm-hmm. And historically speaking, the few minutes right before we fall asleep used to be really good time to reflect on our day, but because you had to shut off the light right? So even if you read before bed, you had to shut off the light at some point, and then you're stuck with yourself in the darkness, and that could be a terrifying moment. And now with smartphones, right, you have something that produces its own light, so you can really just stay connected to something, distracted by something, until you knock out and the phone drops from your hand and hits you in the face, and then you wake up again. So that's alarming. And I think that has some implications for how we bear witness to our faith.
Don't you think we're that lonely?
Yeah, I mean, we're lonely. We like so the modern world is a very lonely place. We don't have the traditional connections of community that previous generations had. It is a very lonely place. And I know for myself, that's one of the reasons I love social media, is that I need adult interaction. And so throughout the day, social media can provide that when I can't go out and get it because of work or life circumstances. We're also an anxious people. And distractions are a way of dealing with anxiety. They're a bad way of dealing with anxiety, almost always. Not always, but almost always. And some of those anxieties are spiritual anxieties. The weight of our own sin, the recognition that we're not right with God, fears that we have that we need to give over to Christ, these sorts of things. We have these anxieties, and it's just much easier when we feel a pang of guilt or dread or loneliness or desperation to just pull out our phones. And you know, sometimes global news, even when it's chaotic, is actually less anxiety-producing than the own anxiety within us. Because we can externalize our fear. We can say, this global news, this political news is crazy, but it's out there. And so it feels much more like entertainment. And it helps us forget who we are.
Dr. Alan Noble is an assistant professor of English at Oklahoma Baptist University. He's our guest today. We're talking about his book, Disruptive Witness, Speaking Truth in a Distracted Age. When we come back, I want to talk about the disruptive church, how we have trivialized evangelism. We'll be back in just a moment with more of Faith Radio Mornings. 51 minutes past the hour. We're talking today on Faith Radio Mornings to Dr. Alan Noble. He is an assistant professor of English at Oklahoma Baptist University. A new book, Disruptive Witness, and it really is the distractions, much of what social media brings into our lives and how attached we are to the internet, literally. And, you know, Dr. Noble, it was interesting, Logan Rausch, our assistant producer here at Faith Radio, was asking, you know, mentioning and making the comment that, you know, you teach college, and so in your classes you're getting many freshmen, sophomores, I assume at some point, that literally Logan was saying, in fact, if you want to ask the question, Logan, that would be great.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that social media and our phones in general are a distraction and an unhealthy place to exist 24/7. But for many young people, teenagers and high schoolers, it gets better as you get to college. But for these high schoolers, if you're not in social media every day, Snapchat, Instagram, then you're not relevant to your friends the next day. We know it's unhealthy. But how can our students and our young people stay apart and close with their friends if they shouldn't take part in any of this social media?
Yeah, so I don't argue in the book that Christians should part from social media, should give up social media. I don't think that's necessary. I think for some people it will be, and because it's not a healthy place for them, and they need to have that kind of discernment between them and their parents and advisors and pastors and things. But I think everyone, and particularly teenagers, need very clear boundaries and time limits and content limits. I'm very concerned about the use of social media for teenagers. I think the possibility for getting wrapped up in expressive individualism which is one of the dominant, if not the dominant, philosophies of our or lived ideologies of our time. Expressive individualism is the belief that your life is justified and validated and important when you discover, quote unquote, who you are and express it. That's what makes life meaningful. Teenagers, we're all fed this myth perpetually. And really, social media is kind of the product designed to facilitate this ideology. Right? That this is literally what most of us do on social media, is that we express ourselves so that we can create a quote-unquote brand. So I would say parents, you know, and teenagers, they need to limit the time and the content that their students are using or are having on social media. But they also need to help them understand that it can be used as a tool to communicate with friends, to share experiences, to laugh about things. And those are fine experiences. But they need to understand that social media cannot be the place where they craft an identity, because if it becomes that, social media draws us, it calls to us, it demands more and more attention and time in order to make ourselves stand out in the world. And that's a destructive cycle. And it's led many teenagers and adults into things that are not healthy at all.
Dr. Noble, you also... Yeah, no, I appreciate that, but I only have a minute or so left, and I wanted to get to this part. You also talk about churches and denominations needing to consider what it means to bear witness in a distracted secular age. In a minute or so, can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, so I spent a good chapter on church practices. Every church has a kind of liturgy, whether it's a low liturgy or a high liturgy. And that liturgy, the way we sing songs, the way we recite scriptures together, the way we do communion, all these sorts of things communicate something about the reality of a transcendent and currently living and existent God. And some of those liturgies, some of those practices really emphasize this world. Some of those practices look much more like TED Talks or concerts, which will in subtle ways signal to congregants and to visitors that Christianity is not a living faith with a transcendent God, but just another option like a self-help program or a musical concert. So the church has a major role to play in showing people that we really worship a living God.
It's great. Dr. Alan Noble, thank you so much for being our guest today. Really appreciate you. And the book is entitled Disruptive Witness, Speaking Truth in a Distracted Age. It's published by InterVarsity Press, and I'm sure you can pick it up on Amazon or other locations. Again, Dr. Alan Noble, Assistant Professor of English at Oklahoma Baptist State University. Thank you for being with us. We'll be back with more of Faith Radio Mornings in a moment. 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Dick Whitworth. Again, thanks to Logan Rausch, Paul Perot, Rachel Sutton for putting this show together. Really appreciate their efforts. Thank you for listening. We never take you for granted. Your kindness, prayerfulness, generosity to keep Faith Radio going and growing is always appreciated. Logan, just quickly, obviously there's a continuing discussion about social media, the effects thereof. I do appreciate your question, though, to Dr. Noble.
You know, it's unfortunate. They say high school is a prison, at least our kids do, but it's kind of true at this point. And not because they're locked indoors, but because they're locked into their phones. And you got to talk to your kids about how they can be a part of the world and stay outside of their phones.
It was a great comment and a great question. And again, our thanks to Dr. Noble. If you'd like to hear portions of any of our broadcast today, it'll be up in an hour or so at myfaithradio.com. Happy Tuesday to you.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.